Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.
Hello and welcome back to the BLL Happy Hour Podcast alongside Chris Rosenthal. I'm Kevin Brown for Inside Lacrosse. Rosie, week one in the books. How are we feeling?
Feeling great, man. Season's finally here. Dove straight in, had some weekends full of lacrosse, kind of, start your morning and end your night with nothing but lacrosse, and that's the way it should be.
The lacrosse equinox was out in full force on Friday and Saturday. High school ball, college tournament, women's tournament, men's, obviously, the NCAA first round, the women's first and second rounds, the NLL semifinals, PLL opening weekend. It all made for a special weekend in the month of May. And Rosie, this is why we do it. You know, we love the game, love watching Lax all day long. And for the PLL audience coming into this podcast listening, you know, we had some great action out there at Zions Bank Stadium in Salt Lake City where, you know, Utah Archers dropped an egg in the first game. They rectified it in the finale of week one. The defending champs look good. Game of the weekend we'll get into with Philly and Maryland. But Rosie, just from an overall product standpoint, what'd you make of the week one with all the overlap and schedule adjustments and all that good stuff?
You know, I thought it was pretty smooth. I guess a lot of it depends on where your priorities lie exactly. But, you know, I saw everything that I wanted to see and needed to see. I thought the kind of the switch that the PLL had to do, you know, if they were going to move up their schedule, they knew they're going to kind of run into this conflict with the NCAA. So starting the season out in Utah this year, I think was a really good idea that worked out well. You could get the games in the evening, so there's not that much of a direct conflict there. And, you know, I really kind of wanted to see how the Utah fans were going to adjust, you know. Usually they get their games right when the season's, you know, seedings are about to be determined. So obviously they come in with a lot more energy, atmosphere, trying to get those number one seeds or something like that straightened out. This game's not quite that kind of stuff on the line. And also, you know, they're coming off of a bad season, got some guys out of the lineup. I was really curious to see if the Utah crowd was going to bring the energy when they're not quite as spoiled as they've been in the past. And I will have to say, in my opinion, they delivered.
Now, talking to co-founder and President Paul Rabel in the offseason, he let me know that, you know, they tried to get this done last year when the Utah Archers were back-to-back champions, and it was just too quick of a turnaround. Instead, you know, they got some Utah Utes fans reffing for their boys, Ryan Steins and Nico DiTaponio, making their pro debuts for the Archers and Atlas, respectively. And, you know, we had some good fun jawing back and forth with the Ponio and who was jawing back with them.
Nick Turn got into it.
Brendan Nickturn, yes. It was great seeing him back with some question mark moves and being more assertive in that second half. And Ryan Steins doing well, getting his first pro goals in a couple games there. So I wrote about him, and we'll get into that. But Rosie, let's start with the game of the weekend with the Water Dogs taking down the Whip Snakes. You know, I had a quick consult with you in the hours leading up to the PLL openers on Friday night. And I'm like, listen, man, didn't get a power rankings article out in time. Let's get a quick graphic out to, you know, set some expectations. And for fans going into the season, going into week one, more specifically, as you know, Terry Fuller brought up a great point that there's different philosophies that you can go about these power rankings in preseason. You can either go, all right, holistically, this is how I envision all eight teams order-wise to finish by season's end, or this is how I thought of it. This is how they're shaping up going into week one. And I had the Philadelphia Water Dogs with a series of moves that new general manager Dave Cottle made in the offseason as the top team going into week one. And, you know, they delivered with a very solid win against the Whipsnakes group that fought back tooth and nail into the game in the fourth quarter. Rosie, you had eyes on this one. I was heading down to Richmond. What did you make of the way that the Water Dogs were able to get it done?
Well, you know, so much about the Water Dogs, when you looked at just the standings last year, you know, you looked at the names and you were like, man, you know, win-loss, right? They still weren't that good. But you saw the names and you were like, they should be able to do a little something with that. And this year, even without CJ Kirst in the lineup, even without Zach Currier, you know, just, I mean, think about adding those two to this lineup. It should be kind of ridiculous, right? They were still kind of able to get it done. Had the stumble in the first quarter, weren't quite able to, you know, generate any sort of offense or something like that. Second quarter, blow up with 9 goals. And I think they just really kind of took a step back, said, okay, what can we do that's just way better than what anybody else can do to stop us, right? So a whole lot of Michael Sowers, a whole lot of pick game, just over and over again. And if the opponent can't stop it, they're just going to keep running it, right? It's just kind of like, running the option or something like that. If you don't have the weapons to stop it, it's just going to be a nightmare of a game for you. So that's basically what they did, and it just kept working for them. Also, Jack Hanna's an interesting guy to me, because I think a lot of people assume he's just a monster every single game, because you'll see him do something and you're like, oh yeah, of course, Jack Hanna is phenomenal, right? 4 points in this game, 2 goals, 2 assists, tremendous play, but he's usually been doing about 2 points, maybe 3. Last time he had numbers like this was 2023. It's been a couple seasons where he's just been kind of, you know, chipping in here and there. If you get a consistent, you know, contribution offensively from him as well, then, I mean, this whole lineup, I think, actually starts to look like what we expect they should look like.
It's an absolute juggernaut. It's a super team. There's no way around it. Bill Tierney's first season, they finished bottom of the standings, 2-8 in 2024. Last year, you know, a little better, like you said, but still way too much inconsistency out of this squad, with the star power of, you know, Jack Hanna's in and out of the lineup with injuries, kind of didn't play as much as Water Dogs fans would have hoped. CJ Kirst missed the bulk of the first half of the season. First 5 or 6 games with that broken hand staying in the college season with Cornell's title winning season. You know, this year, they left no doubt that no matter who is injured, we will have reinforcements. We will have a backup guy in every single position to fill in and perform. And you look at the Sowers, McArdle, Jake Taylor attack line, like that is a very complimentary attack line with the finishing, obviously what Sowers brings to the table from a facilitator dodging, finishing early standpoint. And McArdle, how about him passing Casey Powell on the all-time points list? So, man, this group is special, and I appreciated your write-up post-game, including the quote from Tierney about his evolution as a coach in terms of thinking about the two-point line and how important the getting two-pointers are in this league, right? And then you saw it in that second half. Connor Kelly gets a couple to go, and they extend it out to the 15-10. And it proved to be way too much to overcome, despite Brad Smith's two-pointer, to make things interesting late. So, man, it's a pretty special lineup that they've got going. And, you know, you add in Defense Player of the Year Gavin Adler to a Kenny Brower, Jimmy Freehill line. And, Matt DeLuca, I don't think anyone thinks of him as the goalie of the league, but he's solid. And as long as you have a solid defense in front of him, I think you pointed it out rightly that, like, all right, the offense just struggled early. You saw them losing 4-1, 5-1, Dylan Hess getting the only goal early. Like, this is a squad, once they wake up, and they did against Maryland, that how can you stop them? And I appreciate your comments there, because it's like, all right, we got to go back to what we do well, and we got to give the ball to Mike and letting him cook a little bit with some two-man games and get off this Apatella matchup. What else did you see from a Whip Snakes comeback effort slash the Water Dogs being able to stave them off late?
Well, yeah, just talking about that Whip Snakes comeback effort, like you just said, I think this is one of those games where even though they lost, you've got a lot of good if you're the Whip Snakes or if you're Whip Snakes fans, right? Like, Jim Stagnita post game was kind of mentioning a couple of times. He was like, look, we put up 14 goals. Like, we score 14 times. That's generally, going to win it for us, like, that's usually going to be a pretty good total for them. They should be fine. You look at somebody like Rob Pinnell, who Stagnita was very impressed with, and it's kind of been talking a lot about his evolution as no longer, I mean, even though he's Rob Pinnell, he was the new guy last year, and trying to figure out, first of all, his place on the team. Do you want to come in there and just be the boss and, yell at everybody and tell them what you want, stuff like that? If you just show up. He was, kind of laying back trying to figure out his role. And, they've kind of evolved and transitioned into that a little bit where it's more like, okay, listen, you're the quarterback. Here's the keys. Do your thing. Step up. And, you look at a game like him, 3 points, but no turnovers, And if you get somebody like him just kind of distributing, Brandao looked fantastic. Aiden Carroll, a lot of people contributing. They definitely have some things to take away from this game. Matt Dunn not in the lineup. If you get him back, maybe things look a little bit different on some of these, maybe some of these plays where you need a defensive, not only defensive presence down there, but also maybe a defensive quarterback calling the shots a little bit. Certainly not. I mean, it's week one, so they're definitely not throwing everything away, saying, okay, we're screwed. We've got no shot this year. Time to tank or anything like that. But I mean, they if you're feeling good about it where you are, I certainly don't blame you as a Whip Snakes fan or a Whip Snake.
No doubt. Like, you're right there. You get a goal from TJ Malone coming off the left hash to make it a 15-14 game with 5 minutes left. Great answer from a ridiculous Jack Hanna backhander. This was a shot, right? The
Yeah, I was thinking it was a shot.
it's a shot. It's a shot, no matter how you slice it. He was trying to get it on goal. And credit Jake Taylor for being on the back post and putting that thing away. That backfill was there, but, like, he can't dispate. Kind of it's one of those plays where you get the bounce and you have a player of the savviness of Jake Taylor that you can kind of get that to go. And late, just, this was also a fascinating game that both faceoff guys were out. The starters, Joe Nardella, out for the season. Alex Tafkas is out injured. So Connor Farrell comes in for first time since the Chrome days. Milkman coming in, the missing piece on the super team is hilarious. And you got Petey LaSalle back with the whips. So I thought Connor Farrell's performance was really standout and noteworthy in the win as well.
Yeah, absolutely. He was solid, he's been playing box, so it's not like he's total rusty, but it is still kind of a different animal, as far as you know, wing play and positioning and, you know, just general things like that, even the cadences or, you know, if you're looking up at the ref when he's doing it or whatever, there's little differences, right? But I thought he was fantastic. You know, I asked about him post-game, and both Michael Sowers and Matt DeLuca were like, you know, yeah, we're lucky to have him. He's been a great addition to the team. You know, he's fit right in. He's brought that energy that, you know, he's kind of known to bring, and it's just been a fantastic add. And, you know, he kind of stepped it up second half. You know, they went on a run second quarter, second half, closed out the game, just won all of them in the fourth quarter. You know, even though Maryland was winning, you know, ultimately scoring more in the fourth quarter, you think about how much time was getting eaten up. You know, Farrell might have won the game for them in that regard, just kind of killing a little bit of that clock to kind of stave off the comeback attempt. So, I mean, yeah, you know, if you're talking about, we can start talking right now about GM of the year standings, just what a great ad for Cottle to, you know, pick up the phone and, you know, say, hey, this guy hasn't been in the league in a while, but I'm sure he can still get it done, and it's working out fine.
Yeah, not just playing box, he's been crushing it with the Bandits, and you look at the additions, both in-house and like you said, picking up Farrell, like, Jack Hanna's Colorado Mammoth. Most fans thought they were going further than they did. They upset in controversial fashion, of course, in Indoor, in that Trey LeClaire crease call. But listen, like, you get him back. This is a squad built for every phase of the season with the overlap, and they just have so many pieces. Last thing I want to touch on before moving to the home squad for the weekend, the Utah Archers, is Zed Williams. You know, these teams will be intertwined for years with just the playoff history that they've had, but also this Matt Brandau deal that, you know, straight on, you're looking at it that Stagnita is getting a lot of value with that long term, right? And you're looking at Bill Tierney making that deal without Cottle coming on yet, and you're like, all right, are you sure you're kind of giving up a lot of upside in a player who led the Ivy League in all-time career points? But you gain a player who he didn't know was going to tear his Achilles in box. And just a big shout out to Zed Williams, first off, of, you know, swishing his number to his stepson, Noah Snyder, who tragically died in a car accident at Marquette. The number 43 had a nice little open netter, two-pointer with Emmett Carroll scrambling back to his net, and it was great to see him in PLL action again and wearing that 43, usually wearing 28, a number where he wore as the MVP of the league and as fond memories, title-winning memories with the Whipsnakes. And Brando for the Water Dogs for the Whipsnakes had a great game. So, you know, I think it's a win-win deal, and it continues to unfold that way with, like, you look at the offense that the Water Dogs roll out, like, there's no space for Brando. And when you look at Zed at this stage of his career, he's a really nice complimentary piece be dodging short sticks and doing inverts when you bring in a surefire rookie of the year in the NLL when CJ Kearse comes back from the NLL finals. Like, this is a scary team, man. You talk about the rookies that they got coming back too. Silas Richmond finished his Albany career up a little banged up and so he'll have time to ease into things as well. So if you have an embarrassment of riches and have Zed Williams kind of easing into things as well in this new environment and a new offense, what was fun to see.
Yeah, absolutely. And just to add on that a couple things real quick. You know, Tierney said himself just about the trade. He was like, listen, you know, I believe if you aren't going to play a guy, you should give him the opportunity to find work somewhere else. You know, so that was part of his decision to, you know, to ship Brandt out. He said, you know, like you said, you know, he's not going to fit here. You know, he's a young guy. He should get a shot somewhere. So, you know, Bill Tierney was definitely okay with letting him go, regardless of, you know, any concerns about, you know, his future and, you know, what he might do, you know, when he plays against them down the road or something like that. And, you know, Zed will just have to see. He's got a tough road. I feel like, you know, the team is definitely not the same team as it was when he was traded, you know, to Philly. You know, he doesn't have a spotted attack or anything like that. And he's got a long road back. You know, you come back off an Achilles. Now you're running midfield with a new team, getting used to everything. But he's in a great spot to do it. You know, he doesn't have to be the first, second, or third option. He can just kind of go at his pace and figure out how to contribute in the best way he can.
Let's move right along to the Utah Archers, who began their 2026 campaign after a struggle-filled 2025, where they finished bottom of the standings. And, you know, coming off back-to-back championships, we had higher expectations, of course. And, you know, admittedly, I did forget Grant Amit was also injured. So not only do they have Tom Schreiber using his way back into full fitness, but Matt Moore as well, Amen, I mentioned. And they just have a lot of pieces missing. So that adds up to a recipe of a lot of growing pains and forcing Chris Bates' hand at deploying a different style. But after seeing last year, I think he also wanted to try new things. And that style he talked about a few times in the offseason, including to me for the Ryan Stein story I mentioned, that we want to play faster. We want to play with defensive midfielders that stay on the field. And he made that known when he drafted Aiden McGuire as first short stick defensive midfielder to ever go first overall in the college draft. And with Duke advancing, he won't be ready yet, but they still have a great rope unit room. And no. Sometimes when you install a whole new scheme and style of play, it's not going to look pretty right away. It was pretty ugly, in fact, against the Redwoods, who held the Archers to an opponent low for their franchise history of 5 goals on Friday night. Rosie, what did you see from their evolution of game one to game two in terms of progress of that style? Or just overall, did they go away from it and everything like that?
Yeah, so I think game one, I would have to guess, they probably leaned on it a bit more, you know? And it's probably going to be one of those things where you don't go 100% in right away. You kind of have to adjust the knobs a little bit and figure out how exactly you want to implement this thing, because game one was basically picked up where they left off from last season, and it was kind of depressing, right? The stadium was kind of bummed out, the crowd turned out, but you could definitely tell they were quite bummed out, and for good reason. I mean, 5 goals is just it's sad, and like, you know, it didn't leave anybody with, you know, how I was just talking about the whip snakes, and I was like, you know, yeah, they got a lot of good things there, though. You know, there's plenty to walk away. It did not feel that way after the Archers gave what. It was like, oh, boy, this is a long season ahead of us, you know. But I think they made some adjustments. Kind of getting this homestand, I think, really worked out well for them, since they did, you know, in fact, have this whole new kind of identity they wanted to figure out, right? So you go in the first night, you say, okay, we went all in with that, and I don't think maybe we're quite there yet. So let's pull it back a little bit. We don't have to wait a whole week. We don't have to wait, you know, 2 weeks for a bye or something like that. Tomorrow, let's try this, right? And I think the key difference is, I think what they're going to have to do on multiple occasions this season, I think sometimes Connor Fields, or, you know, maybe Ryan Steins or Sam King, are just going to have to kind of take things over, you know? And I think what we saw a lot more in the second game was Connor Fields saying, you know, okay, well, I'm going to have to get where I need to get, you know, I'm going to have to, you know, initiate more, dodge from X, you know, kind of fight for my shots a lot more instead of just kind of working within the whole offense. Big difference. First game, Connor Fields, 21 touches. Second game, 40 touches. You know, I think they're just going to have some of those games where, you know, they are going to incorporate the defensive midfielders. I don't think, you know, I don't think Bates is throwing away the whole strategy, right? But I do think there's going to have to be times where, okay, maybe let's just give it to Connor and let him figure something out right now. So I think there's a lot more of that in the second game.
What did you think of the horns? The horns were loud in Salt Lake City. Felt like some 2010 South Africa vibes in the World Cup with the Vuvuzelas.
Yeah, I am not a fan of the horns. Personally, I don't enjoy that.
A little bit of a whimpering horn, maybe for opening night. Jollier horns, night two.
Right. Yeah, I could do without it. I don't, when I was listening to it, I could not figure out why I would go, you know, pay money to go to a game and just blow a horn for the entire time. That doesn't seem like fun to me. I would, you know, I'm yelling, I'm clapping, I'm screaming and stuff like that. I can't imagine paying money to go sit in the stands and play an instrument for, you know, that long a time. I couldn't. That is not something I'm trying to do.
Hot take. I think it took some adjusting for the players as well. You know, game two, archers were a little more used to it. And game one, they were like, what the heck are our fans doing, man? But game two, you look at the defensive side of the ball as well, and you shouted this out. Everyone go read Rosie's PLL Week 1 wrap-up article because it's got some gem takes in there and some facts. You know, we were waiting for the Denver Outlaws game day lineup roster to come out. It wasn't until Jared Barnhart, who is the assistant coach for the Florida Gators women's squad, they got upset in the first round of the NCAA tournament. He gets on a plane right over at Salt Lake and puts up 2-1. But other than that, you know, O'Neal, Brennan Lavelle did wonders on him. And just the overall defense, you shouted out Mitch Dunham, who I've been so high on. I wrote about him around this time last year after with Richmond going into the quarterfinals. He's a box goalie, big Canadian, and you wouldn't know it by the way he played this weekend. Just unreal stats. What do you have, like 5-5, 8-8 or something?
Over the two games, yeah.
It's pretty unreal. Like, losing Graham Hossack is a huge blow. Make no mistake. But you have a young talent in Mitchell Dunham that you have to develop here because you got some special in there. And Rosie, what did you think of the rest of the defense? And with Nick Wachuta starting these first couple of games, with Brett Dobson finish his NLL season up?
Nick Wachuta looked so just so calm during the game. You know, he was just picking off shots like they were just, you know, clearing drills, warm-ups, and things like that. Just so much poise. That second game, just total night and day. You know, talk about the crowd. Obviously, these guys get up for the Outlaws coming to town, and, you know, they did deliver in that front. Wachuta, 60% clean saves in that second game. He's just, it was just fantastic performance by him. And I think, you know, it's really important. I think it's going to be more important as the schedule evolves in the direction that it does. You get somebody like Wachuta, who has been there for years, who you know, was there for the championship series. It's not so much, look, obviously Dobson is Dobson. He's a phenom, right? But you put somebody in like Wachuta, or you put somebody, as we'll see from Carolina, you know, when they had Austin Kaut come in, that drop off, and, you know, you get the familiarity with the second goalie. It's not like, you know, they just grabbed a guy off the waiver wire, right? Like, Wachuta is an archer, you know? So I think that really helped the defense knowing who they're working with back there and what he wants them to produce as well. thought he was fantastic. You mentioned Dunham. Lavelle had a solid game. You know that kind of a matchup. When you get it with O'Neal, you know it's going to have to be a physical matchup, and he delivered in that front. Bo Pettersson, another fantastic game in Utah for him. You know, he mentioned the crowd kind of helping him. I think there's probably something to that where, you know, he gets up for the Utah games as well. Little bit of everything with him, you know, goal, assist, won a faceoff, forced a turnover. You know, he got, I don't think I wrote about this. I lose track of which I put in what article or whatever, but he, you know, one matchup, he ends up getting the same sort of two-man pick game with Lavelle, and he ends up covering Brendan O'Neal just fine. Another one in the fourth quarter ends up getting switched on to Jared Bernhardt just fine as well. You know, it was never a weakness for him to switch on to these guys. And, you know, it was just tremendous work. It was tremendous work by that Archers defense. I can't imagine being an Archers fan the way they felt leaving that stadium on Friday versus how they felt leaving the stadium on Saturday. Must have been complete 180 for them.
Much happier horns indeed. For the Outlaws' perspective, what did you make of their offense without Pat Cavanaugh? Because, you know, you start last year without Jared Bernhardt. They lost their first couple games. They go on that crazy win streak and I think finished 7-3, right? And were runners up, obviously, in the title game. They lost to Chaos 12-9 in week two, and they lost to the Redwoods 15-12 opening weekend. Do you think Pat Cavanaugh was a big missing piece this weekend, and where did you see the struggles offensively?
Yeah, I think Pat Cavanaugh being out is just it's such a huge impact. He, you know, takes so many shots because, you know, he's capable of generating so many shots. Did he lead the league last year? If not, I know he and his brother were kind of jockeying for position there. You know, he can always generate the offense. And, you know, Tim Sudan mentioned that he thought maybe Jared Bernhardt kind of left a little bit on the table as far as maybe calling his own number. So this could have been a game where he could have done that, you know, with no Cavanaugh in the lineup with them. But I think when they're all back and Bernhardt has another game plan attack, if you go, you know, O'Neal, Bernhardt, and Cavanaugh, you know, I think that'll certainly be a lot more dangerous than what we got out of this matchup against the Archers. Not to take anything away from the Utah defense. But still, I was also mighty quiet out of their midfield. You know, maybe that's a testament to Utah. We have to kind of let everybody get a few more games under their belts to see, you know, who's the sign of doing really well versus, you know, which team is doing poorly in that regard. But it wasn't quite, you know, dropping the shots from distance that maybe we were used to seeing them last year. So a little slow to get started for Denver in that regard as well.
No doubt. I want to finish up this week one roundup and spin it more looking forward to week two in Providence, Rhode Island, with the defending champs, New York Atlas, being their title defense winners against the Carolina Chaos with a very solid 16-12 win, in which they cruised in the first half, built up comfortable lead, and they were winning 50-50 ground balls to the fact that every Chaos member in that locker room was yelling at each other to try harder. And Stephen Brooks really liked the way that they responded in that second half to make it a better fight. So, you know, you like they're going to get more pieces involved. Their Expandus is probably going to play better. I really like Brendan Nickthorn being that X attackman and, you know, settling into his role there. Man, I missed him as a guy in this league with being away from it a couple of years after that 2022 Rookie of the Year season, bringing the Chrome to second place finish and a disappointing playoff exit. But man, it was nice to see him get his in that second half. But the New York Atlas, you know, Jeff Teat unavailable this week, but you bring in Levi Anderson and he puts up 7 points. Pretty good replacement. Like we said with the Water Dogs, when you have guys to fill in big shoes and they put in performances like that, like, these games matter. Like, you need to get off to a good start in this league, or else, one, it could snowball, or two, like, you obviously don't want to, like, you want to avoid climbing out of a hole, but you need these foundations to build on. And the New York Atlas offense, like, you saw the flashes of Brian Cospiel down the stretch of the kind of the flashback title game, scoring the last two goals in the title game. He comes in the clutch again, earns that price tag that he earned in free agency. And this is a good New York Atlas squad. Losing Gavin Adler kind of lost some steam, maybe momentum wise, but you know, they get this win without Mike Pressler. And it was the story of the weekend with Xander Dickson coming back. What a gruesome, we were sitting next to each other covering that title game, gruesome leg injury in that title game up in New Jersey. And for him to be back so soon, like, we kind of saw it coming with him in training camp and, you know, walking around fine in championship series, being an assistant coach, not quite ready yet. But it was great seeing him score a hat trick as well. So, Atlas, what are your thoughts with New York?
Yeah, seeing Xander Dickson back was fantastic, especially seeing his goal where he's, you know, setting up at X and it's just like going against Liam Burns. And it's just, you know, speed versus speed to curl around X and score. You know, it's not one of those Xander, you know, slip through and, you know, duck around some people and finish a pass from somebody. He was like, all right, I'm just going to have to match feet and, you know, accelerate here. And it's like, okay, you know, not only is he back, but he is, you know, he is comfortable attempting that shot and realizing, okay, I'm just going to have to run faster than this guy. So yeah, no, it was good to see him. I saw he was fired up after that goal. I think especially getting it in such a fashion, you know, it's like, all right, my legs are, you know, they're healed up and they work and stuff like that. Something that stuck out to me from this game, as far as the Atlas go, Matt Trainer finished up the year huge, you know, kind of, you know, when Xander went down, kind of the championship game hero, carried that into the championship series where he was just untouchable, flying all around. This game, 1-for-6, real quiet, you know, but they still put up 16. And I think that's kind of, you know, a testament to what this Atlas offense is looking like. You know, before the game, I'd spoken with Pressler, I'd say about a week before, and he was like, yeah, you know, Jeff's going to be out. You know, we're really going to need somebody like, you know, Matt to kind of step up and help carry this team, you know, especially while Jeff heals up. And, you know, it turns out that they didn't, you know, they he got some, you know, attention and coverage that he's going to get out there playing. But yeah, you know, just you get guys like Costabile and Levi Anderson delivering a performance like that, you know, even Connor Schellenberger. He had 3 assists, but was largely just kind of a quiet game. He was distributing the ball, you know, playing smart, you know, team offense. But, you know, he was never really insistent on, you know, kind of dominating the flow of the game or killing too much of the clock. You know, it was just a very sound effort. It's another team like Philadelphia. I'm sure we're going to be discussing both of those guys going against each other soon enough down the road. But, you know, you just look and it's like, well, if it's not working for this guy, they've got another guy who can take care of it. And yeah, this team without Baptiste, without Teat, without Logan, without their coach, that's 3 captains and a head coach who weren't at this game. And,
yeah, wow.
And they still did just fine.
Matt Trainer, 1-for-6 shooting. Started out with a bang, though. That nice tweener and one of the highlights of the weekend. You know, when you have a goalie like Liam Entsman, you can afford to miss some integral pieces for your squad because he was phenomenal against Carolina. Like I said, it was a first half filled with hustle and effort issues for the chaos that they rectified and fixed in the second half. But Liam Entsman shut the door on that with 18 saves total. So let's flip the script over to week two, Rosie. We got four great games, no bye weeks. Debut of the 2026 Boston Cannons, who I have some insights and takes ready for you. Which game are you most excited for? I'll list them out here for the listeners. Carolina Chaos starts out the weekend against said Boston Cannons, looking to get their first wins for both squads. New York Atlas looking to renew the rivalry with the Whip Snakes and improve the 2-0. The Redwoods building off a we kind of gave the short shaft on to the recap portion of this podcast, built upon a very solid first week with Michael Boehm balling out at that lefty attack spot, and Dylan Ward in his debut, 70% in net against a who are they playing? The Outlaws. So that'll be a good game. Look forward to that one. And then you look at the Philadelphia Water Dogs versus the Boston Cannons in the finale. That means who's off?
Archers have the weekend off after their doubleheader last time.
Thank you. So clear that up. Rosie, which game are you looking forward to most in week two?
Put me down for a Saturday night game, Philadelphia Water Dogs versus the Boston Cannons. Cannons, you know, they'll have their first game to kind of, you know, like what we saw with the Archers, maybe shake off any sort of physical, mental, or strategic rust. And Water Dogs Cannons, as far as gameplay goes, we've seen a lot of great stuff from Sowers and McArdle. We don't know what the Boston defense is going to look like this time around, having lost two of their starters to retirement in this offseason. So I'm not quite sure what that's going to look like. So, you know, hopefully they get everything sorted out in that game one, because they do have a freight train coming their way in Sowers and McArdle. Also, Holman versus Brower, I thought was a great matchup last year. You know, assuming they'll stick with that, but who knows where things shift when you bring Gavin Adler into the mix. You know, is that going to be, I guess, maybe Adler versus Nolting? Is that the matchup there? I'm not quite sure. I don't know. You might have an idea there. You know, the Cannons will be bringing a couple new guys. Mikey Weissar should be debuting probably on Friday, I believe. So see some draft picks appearing in that one. And also, above all, Water Dogs Cannons just don't like each other. And it's a legitimate non-media creation, straight up beef that I think is still going on. And we'll find out.
The Cannons are mostly intact. To answer your question, I do think Gavin Adler draws the Asher-Nolting matchup. He is their primary ball carrier, and that is what makes Gavin Adler the best defender in the league, that he can match up with anyone, big or small, fast or physical. And Asher-Nolting has the size advantage, but man, Gavin Adler's got that lower body strength, and he's playing that Michael Myers music going into the game. So he will be ready for it. The game I'm looking forward to most, I think, is the Redwoods versus Outlaws, mostly because I am looking to see, it's a kind of story of two sides. Can the Redwoods keep up the momentum, build upon their season opening win, And can the Outlaws get off the schneid here? And you know, they've got so many more expectations with that team and the roster that they built. You know, Jared Barnhart choosing them over at the Redwoods is always going to be a storyline kind of linked in both program histories. So looking forward to that one. And also looking forward to the debut of the Women's Lacrosse League, the New York Charging versus the Boston Guard. Rosie, let's spend a couple minutes on this one before we wrap up here, because it's going to be a good one. And, you know, the faces of the league and Izzy Skane and Charlotte North are just must-watch television for any new lacrosse fan. And it's also employing some women's roles that I think will be a welcome sight after a 2026 college season filled with long replays, long reviews. Let's hope the refs get their act together with the WLL and make sure to keep this game and game flow moving. And when you have Rachel Zacheco being in charge of things, I think that's an emphasis for her as well. So I'm really excited to see the 10v10 format and the star power of Charlotte North versus Izzy Skane, the two winners of the championship series for this league. So it's pretty monumental day for Saturday in the WLL.
Yeah, no, it's going to be fantastic. I can't wait. You know, certainly no coincidence that they're kicking things off with Boston versus New York. You know, if you've seen the championship series games, we've seen these two teams, you know, kind of emerge as, you know, elite or premier. If you want to base it on star power, like you mentioned, you know, they've had some of the premier scorers and defenders. Just top to bottom, both of these rosters are phenomenal. As are all four. You know, one of the great parts about having a four-team league is these teams are ridiculously stacked. But yeah, you know, look, anytime you're going to get, you get your Charlotte North and your Izzy Skane, the captains of the All-Star game when they did last have this 10v10 format last year in Kansas City. So, you know, they're once again going to butt heads. You know, I mean, it's New York, Boston, if that's a thing that you like to follow. Rosters are insane. Like I mentioned, BC lost, so you know the Shays are going to be in the Boston lineup. We'll see, you know, we'll see as far as playing time goes, but they'll be there. The Schweitzer sisters are on opposing teams here. Savannah and Delaney are facing off against each other again. I don't know if Delaney's going to be in cage or not with Madison Doucette, but look, if you're looking for plot lines, In beneath the cracks there's a ton of those as well. And then just, you know, big picture wise, it's going to be cool to see, you know, the 10v10 worked out well in All-Star game. We'll see how it goes this time. I'm sure it'll be great. And just star power from top to bottom on these rosters.
That'll do it for this edition of the PLL Happy Hour podcast. Big day coming for the WLL. We'll have coverage here on InsideLacrosse.com. If you liked what you heard, tell a friend and leave a review. We've got more PLL content coming your way on InsideLacrosse.com, like I said. So stay tuned for that. Rosie, can't wait to catch up next week. We've got a lot to talk about. Week two, PLL Pro Day coming up in the Baltimore greater area. In the end of the month, and we got obviously week two recap, week three look ahead. We'll have a guest or two, maybe. We'll see. We'll pull some strings, and listen. I'll bring more energy next week. All right. We'll this overlap, as you wrote in the wrap up. Just getting up the game speed. This is the Boston Kansas podcast. I had a bye week here, and I'm getting the game speed here. So I appreciate you guys bearing with us and listening to the PLL Happy Hour podcast. Rosie, give us a closing thought after the week that was.
Man, the roller coaster just got started, you know. You said it. Yes, indeed, we are, you know, a little rusty, kind of get loosened up, get ready to go. But I mean, we got a whole summer ahead, and I couldn't be more excited. It's going to be a fantastic one. Can't wait to tackle it with you and all these good listeners, and we're going to have a heck of a summer.
Great conversation as well. Terry had with Paul Rabel up in New York. If you missed it, got lost in the shuffle or anything like that, it is worth the listen. So go check that out wherever you get your podcast. And, you know, if you're listening to this, it's on the same feed. So just scroll down a little bit. Thanks so much, and we'll catch you next time.